Live and local on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Pro Football Hall of Famer Ricky Jackson.
I tell you what, man, I was out playing basketball, and a lot of guys came and told me Saints drafted you, and they looking for you. I had forgot all about the draft.
UFC superstar Dustin the Diamond Poirier.
It means everything to me. You know, Lafayette, Louisiana, I was born and raised. I'm a Cajun. I love it. I can't wait to walk to the airport with that dog.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Good morning. This is RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. I'm your host, Raymond Parks III. Cody Schutz is the man that's giving you the beautiful music to listen to this morning.
It is a good morning when Lionel starts you off, isn't it? Isn't it?
I like how you say Mr. Richie's first name, too.
Oh, yeah, we cool like that.
We're cool like that. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 and 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. You can give us a call, as always, on the ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. Some of you LSU baseball fans may still be up.
Right.
From last night's game. Yeah, it started late. It started after 8 o'clock.
8:20. I checked this time.
8:20. So earlier than it did the night before. Right? So that's something that was good.
I was pleased. I was like, oh, we got this. That's an extra 30 minutes of sleep tonight.
When I woke up this morning and I had a couple of notifications via Twitter and a couple of text messages from guests that we had lined up saying, bruh, I got nothing but love for you guys and I honor my commitments, but I'm not going to be making it this morning. And I was like, oh, no, what the hell happened?
So you can call me if you want. I ain't answering.
I ain't answering the phone, man. And then, of course, I checked my email. And there waiting for me is the LSU-Mississippi State historic game there at Hoover Metropolitan Stadium. LSU falls to Mississippi State 6-5 in 17 innings.
Gross.
The game was the longest in LSU history in both innings played and time elapsed, which was 6 hours and 43 minutes. It was also the longest game in the history of the SEC tournament. And after all it's said and done, LSU loses. After all is said and done, LSU loses. 6-5 in 17 innings. Is there anyone left to pitch for LSU? If you're asking that question, I got a good answer for you. Yes, actually. Because somehow, someway, Paul Maneri and his staff found a way in a 17-inning affair to only use four pitchers.
Four. No way. I haven't looked through the specifics of the back end of the game yet.
Four. Mississippi State used seven different pitchers. Okay. Now, they advance to the winner's bracket. Okay. They'll play Vanderbilt.
Good luck.
Well, good luck for that. Vanderbilt run ruled someone.
Right. They run ruled Auburn.
Oh, okay. Hey, congratulations. You just played a 17 inning game. You used seven pitchers. Oh, by the way, now you get to play Vanderbilt.
Who played, I think, eight innings. That game ended in eight.
I hope your fans still have enough energy to shake them cowbells because it's going to be needed. LSU, meanwhile, will meet Auburn in the elimination game at 1 o'clock this afternoon. You can listen to that game live right here on 103.7 The Game. Pre-game will be around 12:30. We'll lead you right in to LSU in the loser's bracket. They have to win to survive. If they lose this afternoon, if they lose twice in one day, because technically last night's game ended this morning, then they'll be bounced from the SEC tournament. We'll talk in the next segment whether or not what occurred yesterday affects them hosting a regional. I have a bold opinion on that. You may be surprised. And that's regardless of what happens today, later right. today.
Can we attempt to do just a little tiny bit of simple math real quick? Because if the game yesterday ended, or this morning ended, at around 3:30-ish?
6 hours and 43 minutes. It started
at 8:20.
At 8:20. Can I use my hands to do
the
math?
Yeah, I mean, that's like two. That's 2:30. 2:30 plus another 33 minutes. So that's like right after 3 o'clock, the game ended.
Yeah, I think 3:03.
First pitch today is at 1 p.m. That's 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Well, that's 10 hours.
10 hours to get cleaned up,
yes.
Eat.
All the way back to your hotel.
All the way back to the hotel.
Sleep.
Sleep.
Wake up.
Take BP.
Get dressed. Do what you got to do. Eat again. They get back to the ballpark 3 or so hours before first pitch. Maybe you change that this today specifically because of such a special circumstance. Maybe Maneri only gets them to the ballpark 2 hours before the game or something. Because I know they like to get there, you know, a few hours early. But I don't know. That's 10 hours maximum time from like the 20. So I was about to say the 27th out. That doesn't work in this game. From the final out in the 17th inning to first pitch of the elimination game is about a 10-hour window. Yikes.
Would you like to know how many men were left on base in this game?
69.
21 for Mississippi State, 17 for LSU. Mississippi State used 7 total pitchers. This is what LSU did. Eric Walker pitched 4 innings. He was not great.
He labored through those 4 innings. The fact that he pitched 4 innings itself is impressive.
He did not look good in those 4 innings.
He labored.
It was a struggle for him.
I mean, he got through it a couple of incredible double plays.
It's one of those things when you're watching him pitch and you know right off the bat, and it's just like, this is going to be a grind for him. Sometimes as a pitcher, you just don't have your stuff, right?
And Todd Walker was calling him out immediately, too, last night. He was saying, uh-oh. And like Walker was saying, go get him with like 2 outs in the 2nd inning, but Eric Walker, you know, you got to give him a little credit where it's due, because if you want to talk about a Jared Poche-type outing, that's what we got from Eric Walker last night. Did not have the best stuff by any means, but, you know, got you 4 innings and kept you in the game.
He kept you in the game.
It could have been way worse. Well, the defense also helped keep you in the game as well.
The defense did a very good job of keeping them in the game early, because he spotted them 4 runs, and LSU didn't score until the 5th, after he was already out of the game.
Right.
So Walker pitched only 4 innings. He gave up 6 hits, 4 runs, and he walked 4. Woof. That's not what you needed from your number one pitcher. Okay, and we talked about it on this show. Now, somehow, some way, the bullpen came in and did their job. Matthew Beck, we talked about it. Didn't we say it yesterday on the show? I said we'd see Matthew Beck today, or yesterday, right? I said that we'd see Matthew Beck, whatever day it is, in that game, because they would want to try to save Zach Hess for later in the week. They put in Matthew Beck. What does he do? 4 very good innings. He only gave up 3 hits, no runs, no walks, struck out 3, threw 70 pitches. That's what you need for your guy. He came in, he stopped the bleeding for the Tigers, and in his 4 innings out there, they tied up the game. He shut down the Fighting Kyle Bells, and LSU plated 2 runs in the 5th and 2 runs in the 8th, and you're like, here you go, tied game, boom. And then they hand it over to Zach Hess, and I know you, Cody, were probably like, uh-oh. You're like, oh, no. You're like, no.
I was in a bit of a daze at this point, but I do recall thinking, boy, I bet. Yeah, I saw that too, Raymond. I don't know what that was. There's a ghost in the studio this morning. I was more along the lines of thinking, oh, it's okay, put Zach Hess in the game, because absolutely Giovanni DiGiacomo is going to hit a home run. That's a thing that's going to happen. So why don't we just put Zach Hess in the game? No, I was ready to go to bed at that point.
Zach actually pitched well.
Told you.
four innings, only gave up two walks, four hits, but no runs. He did strike out five. He gave you 60 pitches as well. So you're thinking, here we go. But then it's a scoreless battle after that. Neither team can get anything going through the 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th. Then comes the 16th inning. LSU takes a lead. And you're like, it's the 16th inning, bro. That's all they needed right there. That's all they needed. And then what happens in the bottom of the 16th? Mikhail Hilliard's on the bump. Final stat line for him, 4 2/3. We said that you'd see him, hopefully, if the game is out of hand. They didn't have a choice. They made the decision because they used Beck, and Beck had pitched just briefly the night before, but they used Beck again. He maxed out at his four innings. They used Zach. They had used Todd Peterson and Devin Fondo the night before, so they didn't have anyone else to go to, right, Cody? I mean, that's how you kind of have to look at that. Zach threw four, and you're like, okay, you have to hand it over to Mikhail. Mikhail surrendered five hits, two runs, one earned. He did strike out eight. So for a while, he looked like he was going to get it done. LSU went up top by one run in the top of the 16th, but then Mikhail and the Tigers gave up the run in the bottom of the 16th. And then Mississippi State scores the game-winning run there in the 17th inning. I mean, look, Hilliard retired first baseman Tanner Allen to start the bottom of the 17th and then struck out second baseman Justin Foscue, but the pitch got past catcher Brock Mathis, and that allowed Foscue to reach first base safely. Hilliard responded by striking out catcher Dustin Skeleton for the second out, and you're like, okay, boom. But Foscue had advanced to second base when the third strike again resulted in a wild pitch. They intentionally walked Rowdy Jordan before Halter from Mississippi State singled to score Foscue for the game-winning run. Mississippi State reliever Keegan James, the last of the seven Bulldog pitchers, was credited with the win. Hilliard dropped to 0-4 on the year, was charged with the loss. To his credit, only one of those runs was earned. Hilliard, Beck, and Zach Hess combined to blank Mississippi State, the SEC's top offensive team, for 12 consecutive innings. Your bullpen comes into the game, Cody. Two of the guys have had issues. They come in, and your bullpen blanks the conference's top offensive team for 12 innings. For 12 innings, and you still lost. The trio of Hilliard, Beck, and Hess combined to record 16 strikeouts in 12 2/3. Maneri had this to say afterwards, quote, "It's a shame either team had to lose. Our guys laid it out on the line tonight. One guy after another delivered courageous performances. It's just unfortunate that we couldn't get the win. It was an amazing and unusual night, that's for sure." And you thought there in the top of the 16th, when Giacomo hit that sack fly to break the 4-4 tie, that it was going to get it done. That was it. They're like, oh, you could breathe. But then Mississippi State scored in the bottom of the 16th, when once again, it was the defense that let them down. LSU misplayed a two-out grounder by center fielder Jake Magnum, which allowed Jordan to score from third base. Wild pitches in the next inning would give Mississippi State the win. Defense let them down. Pitching was there.
Conditioning sounds like might have been a factor, too. You just get tired. You get tired, you get a little sloppy. And then,
bro, it's like 3 o'clock in the morning. You're going to make some mistakes. What does Herm Edwards always say? Nothing good happens at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Right. I mean, it's one of those things to where it's you try to stay disciplined, you try to stay focused, and aware, but it, you know, these are still kids at the end of the day, and you know, 3 o'clock in the morning.
I mean, it just felt like that though, when because DiGiacomo had the home run, his first one of his career early in the game.
Saw that coming.
No one saw that coming.
It wasn't early. That was like, you say it's early in the game. That was like the eighth inning when it happened.
It was a
seventh inning or so. It was early. Yeah. Early in the game.
It was like half. It was at halftime of the game when that home run happened.
You thought that was like, all right, we're getting to a good finish here. Nope.
But you thought when he got that sack fly, there was like, oh, man, boy, here it is. So we'll see. LSU has to bounce back. They got to play Auburn.
They're not as screwed as my initial thoughts. When I got up this morning and realized what exactly had gone down, my initial reaction driving to work this morning was like, well, there goes the tournament for the Tigers. Good play. Maybe they'll still sneak into a host. But you telling me they used – now, there are four guys they used yesterday that are completely done today. You can't touch them.
You can't touch Zach Hess.
Matt anybody Beck, that saw the mound yesterday,
Hilliard,
done.
I don't think I want Walker out there anyway.
Right.
I was just like, oh, dude, so, Wolf, come on. You're the veteran guy. What are you doing?
But things aren't maybe as
Landon Marceau is going to take the bump today. You probably can have Devin Fondo and Todd Peterson pitch for you again today.
A little bit.
Not four innings.
Right. But an inning each? Why not?
You need Marceau to maybe go six innings, though. And you can throw, you know, Todd Peterson. You'd be, I'm ready.
Rubber
coach,
arm. Rubber arm.
Coach. Come on, Skip. Skipper, I'm ready. We'll talk more about LSU historic defeat and how does it impact their chances of hosting NCAA Regional when we come back right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also check us out on 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. We led off the show talking about, hell, you may not even know what occurred because most of you listening right now went to bed like we did and have no idea that LSU lost a 17-inning game to Mississippi State, the longest game in SEC tournament history, and the longest game in LSU history for innings played as well as time elapsed. Tigers fall by one run in 17 innings. Eric Walker gave up four runs in four innings of work. The bullpen stepped up. Matthew Beck came in, four scoreless innings. Zach Hess came in. Had a couple of walks, gave up some hits, but he didn't give up a run. Wild thing kind of was contained. And Mikhail Hilliard pitched well for four innings. But a couple of defensive snafus, wild pitches, allowed Mississippi State to tie the game in the bottom of the 16th after LSU had gone ahead with a DiGiacomo sack fly who himself homered for the first time in his career earlier in the game. So Mississippi State wins. They advance. They play Vanderbilt in the winner's bracket. LSU moves on. They will play Auburn later today, tentatively scheduled for 1 o'clock, first pitch. They're in the loser's bracket. Win or go home. But I'm going to say something here. Regardless of what happens this afternoon against Auburn, a team that LSU took 2 of 3 from to end the regular season, should have swept that series if not for Zach Hess giving up some runs late in that game. Auburn, who was run ruled by Vandy yesterday, I think LSU hosts a regional regardless. They are going to take in account the fact that LSU had to play a doubleheader without a nap overnight. To expect LSU to be fresh and ready to go at 1 o'clock today after not wrapping up their 17-inning affair until 3:03 a.m., they're going to take that into consideration.
LSU got to the 18-win plateau that Nick Suss told us a couple weeks ago is pretty much the milestone, the benchmark for teams out of the SEC to host regionals. They're a national brand. They're a nationally ranked team. They have 18 wins by beating South Carolina the other night. Now, personally, do I think they'll respond this afternoon versus Auburn? Yes. I think you can see Landon Marceau go out there. You're probably going to see a little Devin Fondeau and Todd Peterson, maybe. Paul Maneri and his staff and Alan Dunn did a terrific job last night of only using four pitchers for a 17-inning game. So Matthew Beck, who also pitched in the opener briefly, just a third of an inning, he won't be able to be used today. Zach Hess will not be able to be used today. Mikhail Hilliard will not be able to be used, but they'll have Landon Marceau taking the bump. Todd Peterson will pitch every day if you let him. Honestly. You got to love that about that kid, by the way. And you probably can pitch Devin Fondeau if you need to. Maybe an inning or so. But they're going to need a big performance from Landon Marceau. But Landon Marceau, against this lineup, had his longest outing and his best outing of his entire freshman season back on Friday night. I was there for that game. He went seven innings, only gave up the one run. So he knows this lineup. They're not going to be intimidated. I would anticipate LSU taking care of business this afternoon.
Just go do that, Landon. Whatever that was.
Hell,
just go do that.
He only has to do six innings. Just give him six good innings, give up one run, you're good. Because the lineup's going to score your runs. LSU's lineup's going to score your runs. But, knock on wood. What Cody doesn't realize is that desk is actually made of plastic.
It's for Micah.
That said, I still think by getting to 18 wins, even if for some reason they lose today, do not be surprised if Baton Rouge and the LSU Tigers are awarded one of the 16 regional sites. They have the tradition. You know you're going to pack the park. You know you're going to have the LSU fans come out to watch the other games like they always do. Losing a doubleheader without a nap in between, I don't think is going to hurt them. That's just my personal opinion. You can give us a call, though, on ARCO Equipment Hotline, 337-706-0111 after this break, if you'd like to agree or disagree. Coming up, Reggie Cajun's baseball. They drop a heartbreaker in extra innings as well in the Sun Belt Conference Tournament. We'll talk about it right here on 103.7 The Game.
That ball is hit deep to left field, and the Cajuns are back on top. With a handsome swing here in the top of the 13.
That man just said Monica with a handsome swing. Because you get it? His name is Handsome Monica.
My hero.
So bad.
See if we can cue that up.
Play it for me again. Run that back. Let's give that to the people one more time.
Handsome swing. Monica with a handsome swing.
Oh, I wanted me to hit a home run every time he bats now. Every single time.
And you know, he thought of that and he thought, you know what's going to be clever? This.
I mean, it's no worse. Let's be real here, Raymond. When Undertaker threw Mankind off of the cell and Michael Cole went, for the love of mankind! Like, it's no worse. It's no worse than that.
Bad broadcasting. Speaking of bad broadcasting, welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. I'm your host, Raymond Parks III. Cody Schutz is the producer extraordinaire. We're broadcasting live from 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing.
Safe to say we're running on fumes in here.
Oh, LSU baseball, Hoover. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 and 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. That terrific call and amazing wordplay. It's because courtesy of the Raging Cajuns baseball game there at the Sunbelt Conference Tournament. The Cajuns, Tony Robichaux's guys, they opened up Sunbelt Conference Tournament play with a 6-2 win over App State. That was a team that had bested them 2 out of 3 during the regular season. They start off the tournament well. 6-2 win, that's the single elimination portion of the tournament. They advanced to the double elimination yesterday, and they take on Georgia Southern. We had Dan McDonald on the show yesterday morning, and he basically said, look, this is a kind of a crapshoot in the Sun Belt Conference this year. It's wide open. None of these teams are dominant. None of these teams are going to overpower anyone, and he was correct. You know, Georgia Southern won 32 games. They were the 2 seed, but they looked vulnerable. And, UL had them on the ropes, man. Had them on the ropes. After a scoreless first 2 innings by both teams, Georgia Southern plated 2 runs in the bottom of the third, but then UL responded with 2 runs of their own in the top of the 5th. Georgia Southern got a run in the bottom of the 9th, but UL responded. Top of the 9th, need to tie the game. They do so. And then they go ahead. You feel with the go-ahead run in the 11th. But then Georgia Southern responds, ties it up in the 11th, and you're like, oh, God. That's right, baseball fans. We had 2 extra innings games to deal with, and both of them ended in defeat. After a scoreless 12th, UL took the lead once again in the top of the 13th. But then gave up 2 runs in the bottom of the 13th. It's just brutal. It's a brutal way to lose. They tied the game in the top of the 9th with a sack bunt that brought home Daniel LaHare to tie the game at 3-all. Great. Then in the top of the 11th, Brendan Breaux, former STM Cougar, who's been really coming on of late. Remember, he had the 2-hit game against App State the night before. He singles up the middle. Once again, brings home Daniel LaHare. But Georgia Southern responded with a sack fly of their own in the bottom of the 11th to tie it up. But then Handsome Monica homered to left field. And I watched it here in the office. And you're like, I thought to myself, ball game. Ball game. Cajuns, they just homered in the top of the 13th. What? Look at that ball sail over the left field. Woo, Tony Robichaux. They got that. They're making a run. And then the bottom of the 13th happened. Georgia Southern scored the first run to tie the game on a wild pitch. Then there was a sack bunt. And then the winning run scored on a throwing error by the pitcher. Woof. That's how you lose? That's how they lost. They had the game. They went up by 1 run in the 13th inning. And to lose on a wild pitch and then a throwing error. How do you bounce back from that? That's a punch in the gut. When you have the number 2 overall seed for your tournament on the ropes and you have them beat and mental miscues, because that's what errors are. They're mental miscues. Talk to any coach. It has nothing to do with physical ability. It has nothing to do with talent. It's mentally losing focus. Grant Cox started the game for UL. He went 7 2/3, gave up 3 runs on 3 hits, threw 96 pitches. Michael Lamont came in, 2 1/3, no runs. Caleb Armstrong gave up the 2 runs on 3 hits and 2 innings of work, but it was Jacob Schultz that got tagged with the loss. One run. It was not earned. Didn't even record any innings of work because Georgia Southern was able to score before he could record an out. That's going to be tough to bounce back from. You had the team beat. You had the win in your hands, and you let it slip through. I mean, that's a heartbreaker. UL now faces Troy in an elimination game, which will begin while we're still on the air. 8:30 Central Time.
It's just very weird that when I saw that, I was putting together the 2-minute drill this morning and trying to see, okay, what time are they going to start today? And I saw like 8 a.m. I was like, what is this? It's like, how do I? It's like, just know if you're listening all morning this morning and you make it to Sport of Politics at 9 a.m., the 2-minute drill is going to say something along the lines of, the Cajuns started already at 8 a.m. Like, I don't know how else. It's going to be a tough one, but we'll make it through. It's fine.
We'll give you some live updates towards the tail end of this show. That's right.
That's insane.
8:30 in the morning baseball.
Yikes.
UL had 2 different opportunities to seal the win in extra innings, but both chances came up short.
Is it 8:30? I saw 8 o'clock. I want to make sure I'm not wrong.
UL's website has it as 8:30.
Lame.
Nope. I take that back. It has it both ways.
Well, that's fun.
It has it as 8 o'clock.
It has it
as 8 o'clock, and it has it as 8:30.
Well, that's fun.
So sometime in the 8 o'clock hour, UL will begin their baseball game.
I mean, the UL website, if you go to their schedule, it has it at 8 a.m.
If you click on the story from last night's game, it says Thursday at 8:30, but then it has also in there 8 o'clock. But we're getting off track about information being provided. So,
I mean, it's important to know what time the game starts. It's not our fault we don't know.
Let's split the difference.
8:15.
There we go. Senior Daniel LaHare did pace a group of 4 who produced 2 hits on the afternoon and finished the day with 2 runs scored. Brennan Bro, he knocked in that run with a single up the middle. In extras, Hanson Monica hit his 15th home run of the season in the 13th. On the hill, Jacob Schultz took the loss after giving up a hit in what proved to be the winning unearned run. Grant Cox may have pitched his best game. Tossed a career-best 7 2/3 innings. He retired 14 straight batters between the 3rd and the 8th innings. After falling behind 2-0 after 3 innings, sophomores O'Neill Lockridge and Hayden Cantrell, STM star and Turling's Catholic star, stepped up big and delivered 2 RBI singles to knot the game up. If you want to know more about O'Neill Lockridge, you can go to our website, 1037thegame.com, and check out a feature story I wrote on O'Neill about his journey from STM to LSU to UL. But the Eagles were able to regain the lead. And, Monica hits that home run, and like I said, I was like, oh, that's over. Yet Georgia Southern found a way to score on a wild pitch in a throwing error. Ooh. They play Troy now in an elimination game, win or go home. We believe that's going to be starting at 8 o'clock. So I ask you, Cody Schutz, diehard LSU fan and UL grad, which one is going to be more difficult to get over for the team? Is it UL's loss or LSU's loss?
For the team, it's got to be UL.
Why?
Because this tournament for UL is absolutely empirically win or go home. You have to hoist the Sun Belt Conference Tournament trophy at the end of this tournament for UL in order for the season to continue. LSU, they can lose today at 2 p.m. And whether they're at home or not, that's still up for debate, but we will see them on the field again. UL, they don't have that luxury. If they can't make an incredible run now out of the loser's bracket and win this whole dang thing, then, I mean, time to, you know, hang your jersey up for the
and
season.
And that's the thing. They had the two seed, and then you're in a, such a better spot. You're in for a team like LSU, you're right. They know, in the back of their minds, they know that they're still going to an NCAA regional, right?
I mean, they had an interview with Duplantis before the game yesterday, and he basically said as much. Like, yeah, we're here. We have a history of playing well here in Hoover, and we want to continue that so we can host in the postseason. But, you know, we do know regardless we're moving on. I mean,
correct. UL, they have a losing record. They have to, like you said, they have to win the whole thing. By the way, Cody Schutz said that a month and a half ago. If you pull back the tapes, you wind back the tapes.
Uh-oh.
We had a conversation, and you were like, it was about a month and a half ago.
I vaguely remember saying it was tournament champs or bust.
That's what you said. That's what you said. It was, I think it was far back as the Wally Pontiff Classic. You're like, this doesn't matter. UL has to win the conference tournament.
That's exactly when it was. Good call. Good memory. Good memory. Well done.
I give the respect when it's needed. It deserved.
Whew, that's rare.
So, yeah. So, both teams have to bounce back. I mean, it's just stunning to think that both UL and LSU went to extra innings, lost in heartbreaking fashion, and both of them had opportunities to win those games. And mental mistakes, errors, wild pitches cost them the game. It did it against LSU at 3 o'clock in the morning versus Mississippi State, and it did it yesterday afternoon for UL. And it's going to be tougher, for UL to bounce back. Now, they play Troy today, and this is a team that beat them 2 out of 3 times early in the season. Very early in the season. It was only the third Sun Belt Conference series for the Cajuns. Troy took 2 of 3, beat them 5-4, 10-6, and UL was able to avoid the sweep by winning the final game 4-3. That's very eerily similar to what happened with them in their second series of the year against App State, where they dropped 2 of 3. Can they keep things alive? Can they win today's loser bracket game and keep their hopes alive of making a run in the Sun Belt Conference Tournament? We'll have to see. UL will begin play at 8 o'clock. LSU will begin play this afternoon around 1 to 2 o'clock, based on how the first game ends. We'll see. We'll have to wrap up the first hour of RP3 and Company after this break right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're also simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. And 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. We've been talking this morning about LSU baseball and Raging Cajuns baseball. Both drop heartbreakers in extra innings. The Cajuns losing 13 innings to number 2 seed Georgia Southern in the Sun Belt Conference Tournament over in Conway, South Carolina. Had them on the ropes, even went ahead there in the 13th, only to lose on errors and wild pitches. So the Cajuns will be playing Troy in an elimination game this morning, starting at 8 o'clock. Win or go home for the Raging Cajuns. It's also win and go home for the LSU Tigers, as they lost a historic 17-inning game this morning. It ended at 3:03 a.m. our time. 17 innings. It's the longest game in innings played and in time in LSU history. It's also the longest game in SEC tournament history. Tigers had their chances, but some mental mistakes, wild pitches, cost them that game, as well as Mississippi State gutted out the win, sending LSU down to the loser's bracket. LSU will be playing later this afternoon Auburn, who was run-ruled yesterday by Vanderbilt. And obviously, LSU took 2 of 3 in the regular season finale series at Alex Box Stadium from Auburn. Landon Marceau will get the call today for LSU. Good thing for the Tigers. They only used four pitchers. Despite it being a 17-inning affair, Eric Walker went four innings, got pulled, and then it was Matthew Beck, four scoreless innings. Zach Hess, four scoreless innings. And then Mikhail Hilliard went 4 2/3. Most of that was scoreless until he gave up the late runs. One of them only earned. So LSU still has pitchers. Marceau will pitch. You probably use Devin Fondo today. Maybe Todd Peterson. So we'll see. You can listen to the LSU game live right here on 103.7 The Game. We will cut away from Jim Rome's show. Pick up LSU pregame. Tentatively scheduled for 12:30. First pitch for 1 o'clock. And then after that, we will go right into bumper-to-bumper sports live from the tap room at River Ranch with the good brother, Ben Love. And then we'll have Houston Astros baseball for you tonight as well right here on 103.7 The Game as they take on the Chicago White Sox there at Minute Maid Park in the finale of that three-game series. So you just got to keep it live and local all day. All day long. We got you covered. Baseball, LSU and Astros on the same station on the same day? That is unless LSU decides, you know what, one 17-inning game isn't enough. Let's go for the twofer. Let's go for the. Let's play four games essentially in a span of 24 hours.
And that's it. The problem is there's another game that could also decide to go yes. extra innings that could then push the start to LSU. There's a lot of moving parts here.
Tournament baseball. You gotta love it. You gotta love it. First hour is in the books. It was a good one. We'll keep it going. I know a lot of you LSU fans need a cup of coffee. Get you a second one. Come back for the second hour here of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game. KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parks III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. LSU All-American Skylar Green.
You know, as a young athlete growing up, you always want to do the game-winning something, the game-winning shot, game-winning catch. And I thought the biggest part for me right there, that Georgia catch, that solidifying everybody seeing that LSU for real.
Ridge and Cajun hoop star Alfred Payton.
But it's definitely a boost when you know, when you look up in the stands and you see your mom, see your head, night in and night out, it's really different. I encourage everybody to be in the opportunity to play at home to do it. It's very fulfilling.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Good morning and welcome to the second hour of RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network, 24 hours of sports coverage. You can also check us out on 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. We spent the first hour of today's show breaking down LSU baseball losing in heartbreaking fashion and in a historic 17-inning affair that is the longest game in SEC tournament history and the longest game in LSU program history, both for innings played as well as time. And the Tigers fall short, losing to Mississippi State. They'll have to play in the loser's bracket later today. First pitch is scheduled for 1 o'clock as they take on Auburn. We also discussed the raging Cajun baseball team losing in heartbreaking fashion in extra innings in their tournament game in the Sun Belt Conference tournament over there in Conway, South Carolina. They lose in 13 innings to the number 2 seed, Georgia Southern. UL will have to somehow pick itself up and play early. Their game starts at 8 o'clock in an elimination game versus Troy this morning. But let's talk a little Drew Brees here to start off the second hour. As everyone knows, number 9, the Breezy, was in town Tuesday night because himself and his partners have now purchased the former church on Pinhook and Vero School Road. They're going to open up a Surge Entertainment Center,
It's a very family-friendly kind of entertainment center for kids and teenagers alike. So he was in town for that. He was also in town to talk about flag football and everything else like this. But he also had time to answer some questions from, of course, the media. And he discussed about the foundation that the Saints have this year on the offensive side of the ball. And he talked about how much he liked what they have coming back for the 2019 season.
I love the foundation that we have as a team right now, both on offense and defense. I love the weapons that we have, you know, offensively, adding some of those guys. You know, Jared Cook, we just started OTAs, you know, so having the opportunity to work with some of these guys for the first time now in a practice-type setting is always fun, because you start to see, okay, I see how we're going to use this guy, right? Or I see his talent. Man, maybe we're going to be able to do some things that we haven't been able to do in the past, you know, or recently. So I'm always excited to start the year, because it's always a new year, right? And you got to reestablish your identity, and you see the young guys and even the veteran guy, or the, you know, the guys who've been there for years. It's guys continuing to take the next step, you know, and us to evolve as an offense too. You know, every offseason we know that we have to stay on the cutting edge. You know, we always have to stay ahead of the curve. We know people are gunning for us, and so we've got to have some new wrinkles, and so we'll have some.
We talked about this earlier in the week after the Tampa Bay Bucs decided to inexplicably release their all-pro and multiple Pro Bowl defensive tackle leader of their defense, Gerald McCoy, after 9 seasons, because they didn't want to pay him $13 million this year, and now instead have decided to sign Ndamukong Suh, who was a part of the same draft class, to a one-year deal, which is worth $14 million. I'm not the best at math, but that doesn't sound like a cost-saving measure. But that's just me. I did go to public school in the state of Alabama and Mississippi. So don't know if you want to trust your boys' math skills. That said, we've asked it. We even asked it as a Twitter poll question earlier this week, if the Who Dat Nation would love to see the Saints make a run at adding one of the best defensive tackles in the NFL to the roster. Drew Brees was asked this as well the other night. This is what he had to say.
You're basically asking me if I would love having a Pro Bowl defensive tackle that I've spent the last 8 years trying to run around and avoid and not have hit me join our team. Yeah, of course.
That's an honest answer.
That's a very honest answer.
I feel like that's a very, like, you know, you get a lot of these, you know, cookie cutter responses from athletes, and that to me felt very honest. Like, wait, you're asking me if I want that Pro Bowl guy that hits me all the time on my team?
If I want the guy that makes me fearful that I'm going to get hit, yeah, I want to have him. Right. That's what I argue a little bit. I differ from our friend Andrew Juge, who joined us yesterday, and he was on the fence about adding Gerald McCoy. You want to make a Super Bowl run. This is the same situation the Saints were in last year when they flirted and tried to court Ndamukong Suh to come, and he opted to go to the Los Angeles Rams on a one-year deal instead of coming to the Saints. This is the same situation. Yes, Sheldon Rankins had a breakout year last year, but Sheldon Rankins is also coming off an injury, and he will not be starting the season. I know they got the Brown kid, former Texas Longhorn, New England Patriots Super Bowl champion, but he's a rotational guy. You have an opportunity to add a all-pro, Pro Bowler, generational talent across the defensive line, because that's what Gerald McCoy is. He's one of the best D tackles of his generation. You have an opportunity to get a guy like that. I'm making room for him because he can win you a couple more games just by what he does. And imagine having Gerald McCoy on that defensive line. McCoy, Cam Jordan, Marcus Davenport, and then you have the rotation of the other guys. Woo! A healthy Sheldon Rankins. Can you imagine having a healthy Sheldon Rankins and Gerald McCoy side by side in the interior of a defensive line, and having Cam Jordan and Marcus Davenport on the outside? How many opportunities do you think Jordan and Davenport are going to have for sacks because McCoy and Rankins are going to just eat up the entire offensive line? I think it's a no-brainer. I think if you're the Saints, you make it happen, and you give Gerald McCoy the incentive to try to beat up his old team.
And that on some level, he'd probably welcome the opportunity to sack Jameis Winston as many times as possible. I think that's probably. I think most of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers would feel that way. Drew also was asked about him being kind of, I guess, the godfather, so to speak, of the undersized quarterback, because he's not, he doesn't have the traditional 6'3", 6'4" size that all these NFL teams have long coveted. But yet he's found immense success. He's going to be a Hall of Famer himself. Russell Wilson has now come behind him. So he's asked about these younger guys that are being taken number one overall in back-to-back years, both from Oklahoma and Baker Mayfield, and then Kyler Murray, and about possibly them breaking the mold of what a quarterback can be in this league.
It gets people past the perception of what a quarterback's supposed to look like, right? For a long time, people were so focused on the measurables, we call them, right? So the size, the speed, the, you know, the velocity, or how far you could throw, or, you know, just how you looked, right, or how you appeared. And yet, there's so much more that goes into the quarterback position from a leadership perspective and just being able to absorb all that comes with playing the position. And so a lot of it's here and here, and you can't just measure that. You got to watch a guy. You got to be around a guy. And so I think it's great that, you know, you have guys now like Baker Mayfield, right? I mean, he's kind of in that 6'1", 6-foot category. Kyler Murray. So really two in a row, first picks of the draft, right? Guys that are outside of the, you know, realm of the prototype guy. And I think those guys are proven that, you know, this is maybe the new age of quarterback.
He was also talked about Zion Williamson. As we know, he is the projected number one overall pick in this summer's NBA draft. The New Orleans Pelicans, are rededicated from the ownership perspective with new front office personnel. They were rewarded the number one overall pick by winning the NBA draft lottery. And if you remember, you go back to that, even Sean Payton tweeted out a photo of Zion Williamson in a Saints jersey, you know, that they could use him as a pass rusher, or they could use him as a tight end, or whatever it may be. So Breeze had some good fun with that as well, about the buzz going on down there in New Orleans about Zion Williamson possibly coming to the New Orleans Pelicans.
As long as AD sticks around, we got to have AD stick around with Zion, because that'll be a tough tandem there.
When asked what position Zion could play for the Saints, well, this is what the Breezy had to say.
Red zone specialist. You don't like, you we don't want to bang those guys around too much, because, you know, they got long careers in basketball. But I'm just thinking, just a couple fades, you know, back corner of the end zone.
Absolutely.
I'm sure those guys would like just jumping up and snatching one out of there. I don't think there's many guys that could jump with those guys out there.
Give you a dollar if you can guess who asked that question.
I already know the answer to that question. That's the king of all of Acadia sports media, George Faust.
He can't help himself. He's got the face of New Orleans in front of him. George Faust is New Orleans encapsulated. You know, we had to ask him, well, what about the new guy that's the face of New Orleans? If you tagged, I just think it's hilarious. If Faust can't help himself but laugh, I can just see his face. He's looking like a giant child, just smiling, just beaming from ear. Like when Coach O gets real happy, you know,
he
gets the smile and he just looks like a 7-year-old kid. He's so happy. I feel like that's how Fausty was in that moment.
Interesting thing that he said there, Breeze did, about AD as well. We need AD to stay. So you have Drew Breeze, who's going to go down as the most beloved New Orleans Saints and possibly the most beloved sports figure out of New Orleans?
Of all time.
Telling you, putting it out there that AD needs to come back. You've had Cam Jordan challenge AD on social media, say, hey, you're going to stay here and mentor this guy and be a leader? The other sports team has now challenged you.
Right.
And you have new leadership in place with David Griffin with the Pels, and Gail Benson being committed, and you got two of the most vocal and well-liked Saints players, because Cam Jordan's loved, too. You see a lot of his jerseys in the stands.
Whew. And it also helps.
And now you got Zion Williamson coming in. If you're AD and you see how much of a mess the Lakers are, do you reconsider?
I mean, it makes, to me, an even bigger difference that here recently the Saints are a perennial you know, playoff team, so to speak. I know they had their 7 and 9 years. I get it. But the Saints are a very good, respectable NFL franchise. So it's not like, you know, it's the Jets telling the Knicks to get good. You know what I mean? If the Jets told the Knicks to get good, the Knicks would be like, shut up, go get good yourself. But the Saints telling the Pels to get good, the Pels could sit there and be like, all right, I see. I'll call your get good, and I'll raise you a Zion Williamson.
Everything that's happened, because AD's beef was with the training and the health and the front office decisions, right? That's what we know that. Well, you got rid of your general manager.
Right.
You bring in Griff, who's won a world championship in Cleveland, knows how to build a front, knows how to run a front office. He brings in the best trainer considered in the NBA, poaches him away from Phoenix. You get a nice, young, dynamic general manager, a former player, which is important with these guys, a former player, a former lottery pick in Langdon, who helped the Nets become a playoff team and has done great things in the G League, and you got the number one overall pick. If you're AD, you could, and I know there's a lot of hurt feelings, but you could be like, you know what? This team is showing me that they're committed. He can blame it on Dell Demps having beef with him, him being incompetent. Would Pels fans take him back?
Yep.
I think so. I think this could be repaired. I still think it's a long shot. We'll talk more about...
I can't recall anything during this whole turmoil that I would stamp as bridge burning. You know what I mean?
There was pettiness, but there wasn't exactly...
Exactly.
Bridges were not torched by any stretch of the imagination.
I don't think so.
And the team and his teammates...
They were with him the whole time.
They were still... They still loved AD.
They were behind him. They at least openly... They supported everything Anthony Davis was doing. So,
could you mend those fences? Could you get AD to sign a contract extension?
I'm going to say yes, and I'm going to say yes, and even say that I don't even think that's wishful thinking. I think that there's
if
a
Griff
good
shot. Does that, just go ahead and give him like front office personnel award,
yeah, general manager of the year.
Just go ahead and give it to him, and just make that happen. We'll ask that question to Les East in the third hour. Our friend from Crescent City Sports, who covers the Pels and the Saints, about that. But Drew Brees having some fun in Lafayette with the announcement of opening the Surge Entertainment Center, also his flag football initiative, and answering silly questions from George Faust about Zion Williamson. That's why we love George. That's why we have him on the show. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, Houston Astros, they drop one last night there at the Big Juice Box. We'll talk about it right here on 103.7 The Game.
This one slugged. Left field. This could go. It does. Alex Bregman. Bregman with his 15th home run this season and cuts the lead in half. It's 2-1.
Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 and 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. Houston Astros racked up 11 hits last night, including that Alex Bregman home run, but it wasn't enough. As the White Sox, the Southsiders, the team that Cody Schuetz hates more than anyone else...
Not true. The Cardinals.
Oh, the St. Louis Cardinals. Hey, just ask St. Louis Cardinals fans. They'll tell you that they're the best fans in baseball.
No, will they?
Yeah, they'll that's tell, what they tell you.
They'll tell you that.
They love that. Oh, they love saying that. No, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, I've been to Old Bush and New Bush Stadium multiple times, okay? Because when I lived in the Midwest, I was the closest facility. There's some of them that are very good fans. There's a lot of them that do that thing. Well, you know, we're the best fans in baseball. If you're telling me that you're the best fan in baseball, you're not the best fan in baseball.
You like, in order to be dubbed the best fans in baseball, I'm pretty sure someone else has to dub you that. You can't just...
Yes, you can't just then embrace it and just...
Right.
Oh, Cardinal fans. Don't get me started.
See, you're just validating my point.
We'll do a rant of the week on the fly. So, Astros fall 9-4 to the White Sox. And the White Sox had four home runs, including a grand slam by Charles Tilson, the first homer of his career. That's a way to start off. I mean, to get your first home run to be a grand slam, that's good. That's a mic drop moment if there ever was one. The Astros had four double plays plus a triple, but they still lost 9-4. Gerrit Cole did not have himself a good game. He surrendered two of the home runs last night, one by Jose Abreu in the fourth inning, and another to rising prospect 22-year-old Eloy Jimenez in the second inning. He would get another shot in the eighth. Cole pitched five complete innings, allowed six earned runs, gave up seven hits and a walk. He was off. It's just, once again, it's one of those things where you can look at a pitcher like we saw Walker last night for LSU. Just off. You can tell sometimes the guy just doesn't have the stuff on the mound, right? And that was the case for Gerrit Cole last night. His fastball was down. His sliders, four of those went for base hits. So not a good night on the bump for Gerrit Cole. And they dropped the game to the White Sox. The Astros did most of their scoring in the fourth inning, beginning by that solo shot that you heard by Alex Bregman, the former LSU starts his 15th of the season. That puts him in second place in the American League. And now that also puts him on pace to hit 45 this season. Michael Brantley, one of the best free agent pickups of any team in the offseason. He followed with a single following Bregman's blast, and that would follow by a Carlos Correa, who's playing at such a high level this year. He's finally healthy. He had a double that brought in Brantley. But it proved not to be enough. Enough. Because the White Sox just teed off on the Astros pitching. They will wrap up the series tonight. It did break a 9-game losing streak for the White Sox against the Astros. But still, the Astros, even with last night's loss, the Astros are still 15-3 in their last 18 games. 15-3 in their last 18 games. And they're 33-17 overall. This was also, last night's game was the 19th straight game in which the Astros hit a home run, tying the team record. It's a little surprising. You thought when they had like Bagwell and all those guys back in the day that they would have had a longer streak of home runs consecutive. But it ties the Astros record, team record of 19 straight games with a home run. We'll see if they can break that record tonight as they'll wrap up the series with the Chicago White Sox there at Minute Maid Ballpark. Game time, first pitch is scheduled for 7:10. You can listen to that game live right here on 103.7 The Game. The Astros will be sending rookie Corbin Martin 1-0 on the year with an ERA of 3.86 onto the mound to try to get them the series win. So, yes, hate to lose like that if you're the Astros, but once again, you're still 15-3. You're still 15-3 in your last 18. You still recorded 12 hits. You hit the long ball. No Springer, no Altuve. Yeah, you dropped a game. Your pitcher had an off night. It happens. Look, there's only one Justin Verlander. You already got the guy who looks like he's going to, you know, claim the American League Cy Young Award. You can't have a whole staff of those. You just can't. It's just not possible. You're not the Atlanta Braves of the early to mid-90s. And that really didn't help them either. I mean, they only won one World Series. I should know. I'm a Braves fan.
The Cubs in the early 2000s didn't even get there.
There you go.
They had an incredible staff.
So Stros be back at it at the Big Juice Box tonight reminder that Bumper to Bumper Sports is going to be live at Minute Maid Park for the second straight year this Friday. Tune in Friday the 24th at 4 p.m. as Ben will be live from the home of the Houston Astros on 103.7 The Game. The special broadcast is brought to you by ARCO Equipment. Bumper to Bumper Sports live at Minute Maid Park starting at 4 p.m. this Friday. The good brother Ben Love. When we come back, we'll talk more Astros with James Yasko of the Lima Time Time podcast right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. 24 hours of sports coverage. You can also check us out on 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. We talked before the break about the White Sox roughing up Gerrit Cole a little bit to win 9-4 against the Houston Astros despite an Alex Bregman home run and the Stros getting 12 hits. Despite the loss, the Astros are still the best team in baseball. They still are 15-3 in their last 18 games, and they can win this series versus the Southsiders tonight. First pitch, 7:10. You can listen to the game live right here on 103.7 The Game. Right now it's time for us to head out to the ARCO Equipment Hotline and get some of that Astros insider knowledge from the co-host of the Lima Time Time podcast, and hopefully a man who has found his keys. It's the one and only, James Yasko. James, how are you this morning?
Hey, I'm okay. How are you doing?
Doing well. Did you find your keys, brother?
I did, not until like very late that night. Like they were gone for a good 15 hours before I found them, so I hope they enjoyed their journey.
Oh, you hope they enjoyed their journey. How much of a monkey wrench did that throw into your day, man? Did you have to take the bus? Did you have to take the city transportation?
See, I'm lucky enough that I walk to work, and so it wasn't. I mean, I had to have someone like unlock my classroom and all that good stuff. But I can get by for a couple of days without my keys.
Well, we're glad to hear that you somehow recovered your keys, James. So let's talk about the Stros. I know they lost last night, and Gerrit Cole was not great. I know you watched the game. Any concern whatsoever that he seems to have lost a little velocity off of his fastball a couple miles per hour this year as compared to last year? Any concern about that?
Not really. I mean, I think there's always a point in the season where you experience some dips as sort of you sort of regain your arm strength. For him to lose a couple of miles off of his fastball means that he's probably back in line with where he has been his entire career. Like last year, he was on a freaking mission. If it continues, then yeah, maybe some concern with diminished fastball velocity. But I mean, last night was just stupid all around. I mean, you got Ivan Nova pitching like it's 2011, and the fastest guy on the team is hitting into a triple play. Like it's just like what I love about baseball is how it mirrors everyday life. And sometimes every day in life, you just have freaking stupid days, and that's what we saw last night.
That's a good way, because you had a little bit of everything, right? You had the multiple double plays, you had the triple play, you had the Astros getting 12 hits, and yet they still lost. And it just across the board, it was one of those odd games. But you're right, baseball is that way, and you're going to have those kind of quirky games, so to speak. Let's talk about one of the pitchers from earlier in the week. Justin Verlander is just absolute filthy right now. I don't think it's any question who's leading the Cy Young race, and I know it's way early to say that. It's only May, but the guy already is closing in on 10 wins, and it's not even the end of May. His performance that you're seeing night in and night out when he's out there on the bump, James, I know he's been valuable for this franchise, and that's why they traded for him, and he helped win them a World Series, but is this the best he's pitched since he's been a Houston Astro?
It's hard to compare it to, you know, his 2017 when he first came over. The city was recovering from Harvey. and closing in on their first division title in, you know, what, 12 years, something like that. Maybe even longer than that. And so he was just absolutely lights out. But at that point, you could just kind of chalk it up to he got shipped out from a team that's clearly rebuilding to a team that has a legit shot to win the World Series. But for him to be doing this and putting this little run together in May, it's in the conversation for like his like the best he has pitched in his entire career.
So you're saying that this could be the best that he's pitched in his entire career, period.
I think he's setting it up to where, I mean, the slam dunk Cy Young, pitching triple crown winner. Like, I mean, for me, the Astros are always like, I always have the game on, whether it's I'm listening on my phone or watching it. And every now and then, you know, I'll read a book or work on something else while the game is on. Not when Verlander starts. And it's been a while since the Astros have had a pitcher that you make plans around. Like, no, I can't go out tonight. I'm busy. And then you just hope that no one asks what you're doing, so you don't have to be a grown person saying, I'm going to watch Justin Verlander pitch. And so, yeah, no, he is sort of an adjust your schedule. That's what his starts are becoming this season.
Yeah, and he's been absolutely tremendous. 8-1 on the year, ERA of 2.24. He leads the team in innings pitch with 72. He's got 89 strikeouts. The WHIP is a mind blowing 0.73. He's just head and shoulders above anyone else in the game right now. Let's talk someone else in that rotation that has been a bit of a surprise to me. Maybe not as much to you, James, but Peacock. He's pitched very well for this team. 5-2, ERA of 3.5. And he doesn't have the strongest stuff. You know, he only has 50 strikeouts, so he's not going to just fan batters left and right. But he's pitched at such a good level. How surprised have you been by the performance by Peacock this year?
Yeah, I mean, it's surprising when you see a guy like Brad Peacock. It feels like Brad Peacock has been on the bubble for like 7 years as far as making the roster or getting traded or sent to Round Rock or something like that. Since he altered his delivery to pitch out of the windup, you know, he's been a completely different pitcher. And I guess you chalk that up to, well, you know, he bounces back and forth between the bullpen and the rotation so often, you want to keep your mechanics as consistent as you possibly can. But since he's been pitching out of the windup, it's been crazy. That 3.5 ERA comes with that one outing against the Twins where he allowed like 7 earned runs.
So yeah.
I'm not a fan of, if you take out that start, then his stats are this. So that's sort of like, well, if you take out my student loans, then I'm a millionaire. You can't just arbitrarily ignore some major event. But the majority of his earned runs came in that one outing, and he changed his delivery, and he's been pretty great since.
We're talking with James Yasko. He's the co-host of the Lehman Time podcast right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. James, Peacock has been very well. Let's talk about the young man, Wade Miley, Louisiana kid, a former Southeastern Mighty Lion. He's 4-2 on the year, ERA about 3.5. He's not a big strikeout guy, only 37 Ks, but he finds a way to get it done. With him in the rotation and Peacock and Verlander, they're all so different in Cole. This is such a formidable rotation because each guy brings something different to the table, right? And it keeps lineups off balance, especially in a playoff series.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, if you have everyone in your rotation that throws 98-99, then the novelty of 98-99, you adjust to it. And so if every pitcher is exactly the same, then, you might have an elite fastball, but hitters have seen it for, you know, 25, 30 innings to in a four-game series. So to have the pitching staff that does so many different things, I think that is part of the – that's not an accident, but that's part of the recipe for the Astros' success. Like, you just don't get comfortable with someone's delivery, with how the ball moves, with the velocity.
Let's talk a little bit about Corbin Martin. He's going to be getting the start tonight there inside Minute Maid versus the White Sox. Once again, you can listen to that game live right here on 103.7 The Game. First pitch scheduled for 7:10. This is a young man who's making his third start. He's 1-0 on the year, ERA of 3.86, WHIP of 1.39. He's a Houston native, second-round draft pick by the Stros in 2017. Of course, he went to college there in Texas A&M. What's the buzz like there in Houston and Texas about one of their own coming up and possibly being a huge contributor for this rotation and for this team, James?
I mean, it's always nice to see a Houston kid do well, and especially and that's true for any team. Not so much Trevor Bauer, who lives in the Woodlands. He can jump off a building.
Is that shade just towards Trevor, or is that shade towards the Woodlands as well?
It's a little bit of both. I mean, the Woodlands is just, and it's, you can say this about any place in Houston, but it's just strip malls holding hands. Like, that's just all the Woodlands is. Everyone thinks that, never mind.
Sorry, James, keep it going. Sorry, man.
Burn down some friendships if I get on that one. But I think, especially with Corbin Martin, obviously super excited about how he did in his debut against the Rangers. Less excited in how he did against the Red Sox, but I'm guessing that, it's a good third sort of rebound start. You can chase the White Sox. They're not terribly good. They will be in a couple of years, but right now, it's a start at home. He'll be in front of his family, and I guess most of them went to Fenway anyway, last weekend. But, I think, it's optimism, but, if you're counting on Corbin Martin to win you a World Series, then something else has gone wrong. So I think it's a good spot for him to kind of get his feet wet, learn from Verlander, learn from Cole, learn from Brenstrom, and just contribute. Like, you don't have to save the world. Just get your innings, get your outs, and let the offense do its thing.
Yeah, and he's in a perfect situation because of everyone else they have. So there's not going to be an immense amount of pressure on him. So the Stros and A.J. Hinch, they can slowly bring him along, right? That's the whole thing. They don't have to put him in too many pressure-packed situations. They can let the young man develop into someone that can be part of their rotation for years to come.
Right. And, it's a little bit different than Lance McCullers, who, debuted in 2015. But the Astros really needed him. And he was able to respond to that. And he's obviously an excellent pitcher. And I don't know either of them personally, but it just kind of seems like their personalities are a little bit different. So I think, whereas McCullers might have even thrived on the pressure of needing to deliver wins, they don't necessarily. If Corbin Martin gets them, then freaking awesome. But he is not crucial to the rotation the way that McCullers was in 2015.
We're talking with James Yasko. He's the co-host of the Lima Time podcast right here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. James, Carlos Carrera, he was banged up last year, played through the injuries. It definitely affected not only his defense, but definitely his bat. It's so good to see him back out there, kind of returning to form. He's batting around 300. He has double-digit home runs. He has more than 30 RBIs. How critical has it been to have Carlos back returning to form this season, especially with Altuve being nicked up and struggling?
Yeah, no, it's huge. I mean, he is a massive presence in the middle of that lineup. But I still don't understand how or why people doubted that he would return. He's been this hitter for way longer than he was the hitter that he came back from his back injury too soon. Right. Last year. So, I mean, he's consistently a 300 guy with power. And, I mean, I don't know. I've thrown out my back. Have you thrown out your back?
I've never thrown out my back, but no.
I threw out my back a couple months ago and basically I was an invalid. Like, I wanted a wheelchair. I wanted to go to the hospital and there was one night where it was real bad, and I was like, I'm okay with dying right now. So if you ask me to swing a bat, 10 to 12 times as hard as I possibly could, then I would tell you to go to hell and wouldn't do it. So the fact that he even tried to play through it is impressive to me. But he's this guy. This is who Carlos Correa is.
James, I appreciate appreciate you making some time for us as always. Enjoy the rest of the week. Are you now on summer vacation, brother? Is school officially out for you over there?
Next Friday is my last day, so I got a week left.
Power through, man. I know it's going to be rough, but power through. You can do it.
We got it.
James, appreciate you, brother. We'll talk to you next week.
Hey, have a good one.
It's James Yasko, co-host of the Lima Time podcast, joining us here on RP3 and Company, talking Stros. When we come back, we'll wrap up the second hour right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. You can also check us out on LUS Fiber on 133 and 1133 in HD. Got a little hoops talk. Pelicans guard Drew Holiday was named to the NBA All-Defensive Second Team yesterday. It's the second consecutive season that the New Orleans Pelicans guard was named to the NBA's All-Defensive Teams. He was named to the second team this season 1 year after being named to the first team. Holiday received 31 votes for the first team and 28 for the second team to finish with 90 points. That was behind guards Marcus Smart of Boston, who got a whopping 63 first-team votes, and Eric Bledsoe of the Bucks, who got 36 first-team votes. It was Smart and Bledsoe's first selection of their careers. In 67 games, Holiday finished with 54 blocks as a guard. 54 blocks. His blocks per game average led all guards in the NBA, and only Ben Simmons, James Harden, and Bradley Beal finished with a higher block total. He also tied his career high with 1.6 steals per game, a mark that he's hit 5 times in his career. He was on the second team. I'm going to say something to you here, Cody, real quick. So if I tell you they got the all-defensive first team and the all-defensive second team, right? Klay Thompson, Joel Embiid, Draymond Green, Kawhi Leonard. Are those guys on the first team or the second team? If I just told you all NBA defensive team, and I say yeah. Klay Thompson, Joel Embiid, Draymond Green, Kawhi Leonard, you're going to tell
sounds
me
sounds like first team.
That's the second team,
right? Draymond Green alone. Who's got that spot over Draymond?
The first team for all defensive NBA team: Rudy Gobert, Paul George of Oklahoma City. The Greek Freak, Giannis for the Bucks, Marcus Smart from Boston, and Eric Bledsoe from Milwaukee. Draymond Green has been selected to the all-defensive team 5 times. Kawhi Leonard, 5 times now. But they were pushed to the second team. Interesting. Still, a great honor for Drew Holiday, who had his season end short because of the injury. He also had to deal with Anthony Davis and all the drama that came with the trade request and then the limited time of minutes that put more responsibility on Drew's shoulders. And he stepped up as the leader of this team moving forward. Once again, we'll ask Les East coming up here to start the third hour with everything that's going on with the Pelicans, with getting Zion Williamson, with getting David Griffin, with getting one of the best trainers in the business, with getting a former lottery pick and young, dynamic general manager. Any way they keep Anthony Davis with Drew Holiday, Zion Williamson, and make some other moves in free agency, could that happen? I don't know. Be interesting to see. Either way, the Pels are going to be more improved for the 19-20 season, that's for sure. That's going to do it here for the second hour. Woo! It's flying by today. Third hour coming up. Les East from CrescentCitySports.com is going to join us right here on 103.7 The Game.
Live and local, we are Acadiana's sports station. 103.7 The Game. KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette. It's time for RP3 and Company, where Raymond Parch III and Cody Schutz talk sports with the biggest names in the state of Louisiana. Raging Cajun legend Brian Mitchell.
My dream was always to play in the NFL, so having that opportunity was the main thing I needed.
LSU College World Series hero Warren Morris.
I don't get tired of talking about it. You know, if people remember me for that home run and winning that championship, I think that's great.
Time to find out what's behind that door as RP3 and Company starts now.
Good morning and welcome to the third and final hour of RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. Simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network. You can also check us out on 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. We've talked a lot on today's show about LSU baseball, Raging Cajuns baseball. Once again, to recap, in case you were sleeping like a normal person, LSU baseball loses a historic 17-inning game to Mississippi State. They're at the SEC tournament in Hoover. They will now play in the loser's bracket against Auburn this afternoon. First pitch tentatively scheduled for 1 o'clock. You can listen to that game live right here on 103.7 The Game. Auburn, by the way, was run ruled yesterday by mighty Vanderbilt. The Raging Cajun baseball team also had extra inning heartbreak as well yesterday in the Sun Belt Conference tournament over in Conway, South Carolina, as they dropped a game to number 2 seed Georgia Southern. Let that one kind of get away from them there in the 13th inning. And before the break, we talked about Drew Holiday. Despite having his season shortened by injury and dealing with all the Anthony Davis restrictions, trade talk, and everything like that, Drew still managed to get all defensive team honors, second team from the NBA yesterday. Great honor for him, the leader of the Pels. We're going to talk a little bit about more about Drew, Anthony Davis, Zion Williamson, and more with our next guest as we head out to the Arco Equipment Hotline and welcome on to the show from CrescentCitySports.com. He covers the Saints, he covers the Pels, and he joins us every week. It's our good friend, Les East. Les, how are you this morning?
Doing well, Raymond. How are you?
I'm doing doing great. Let's talk a little bit. Let's start right with Holiday. He was first team last year, all NBA defensive team honors. This year, second team, nothing to sneeze at, especially when you look at the other guys who earned second team honors, Draymond Green, Klay Thompson, Kawhi Leonard. These are some of the best defensive players in the league. What did you make of Holiday earning second team honors, and did you think he deserved to be on the first team?
Well, that's hard to say. He's certainly one of the elite defensive guards in the NBA, in addition to being an outstanding offensive player, because he was first team last year, I thought there was a pretty good chance he would be first team again this year, missing the last few weeks of the season with that injury may have been a factor in it. I think first team, I believe Eric Bledsoe from Milwaukee made it, so I think probably the success that the Bucks had probably factored into that as well. So it's not shocking that he'd slipped from first team to second team, but I certainly expected him to be on the an all defensive team somewhere because he's one of the best defensive guards in the NBA. The Pelicans prove it every night by putting him on the other team's best scorer, which sometimes is a forward, and he usually rises to the occasion. So it was a very deserving honor for him.
We're talking with Les East of CrescentCitySports.com. He covers the New Orleans Saints and the New Orleans Pelicans. Talking to him here on the Arco Equipment Hotline. Les, is there any chance whatsoever that the Pels convince Anthony Davis to not only stay, they don't trade him, but convince him to re-up sign a contract, another max deal, pair him with Drew Holiday and Zion Williamson and everything like this, because it just seems momentum is headed in that direction. We had Drew Brees here in Lafayette the other night saying, you know, bringing up about, you know, needing Anthony Davis to stay. We've had Cam Jordan say it as well, hey, challenging Anthony Davis to stay and mentor Zion Williamson. Alvin Gentry hasn't closed that door. Can David Griffin work his magic and convince AD with everything that's happened, a new general manager, new training staff, Zion Williamson, any way that he can convince Anthony Davis to stay?
I think it's possible. I think it's probably unlikely at this point, but I don't rule it out for a few reasons. One is I've just never felt that Davis's heart was 100% in that trade demand. I think his management people are convincing him that ultimately he'll be better off in some other market. I think a lot of the factors that go into that have changed with the changes to the front office and the impending major change to the roster. So I'm not sure that the case that could be made for a trade demand is even as good as it might have appeared when he made it in January. The Pelicans can pay him more money than anybody else. That has got to be a factor in his thinking. Certainly the arrival of David Griffin, the hiring of the new head of the training staff, perhaps the most respected person in the NBA in that regard, for a player who has had significant injury problems over the course of his career, I think would be smart to pay attention to that hiring. And, of course, the arrival of Zion Williamson makes a big difference. So I think there are a lot of reasons why Anthony Davis should take a step back and say, you know what, this, even if this was not a good situation in January, it's a much better situation now. I should at least take another look at this. So I think there is a good case to be made. The thing that I wonder about is whether David Griffin, having heard Davis saying that he wanted out initially, and then sitting down and talking to him, I'm not sure Griffin is going to come away saying, this is a guy I have to build a championship team. I just think even if Davis relents on his demand, I'm not sure Griffin is going to be sold on Anthony Davis. So I think it's unlikely that he winds up staying here, but I think there are enough has changed since January that it is a possibility, but I think still the lesser of the two.
We're talking with Les East of CrescentCitySports.com. He covers the New Orleans Saints and the New Orleans Pelicans here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Les, where do the – I guess my question is with Griff, he's making so many great moves. He's got the GM that he wants, a young, dynamic guy, a guy that they – the Pels interviewed to be possibly the vice president of basketball operations. He has great success in the G League. He's helped turn around the Brooklyn Nets into a playoff team. You have him as the GM. You got the training staff. You got Gail Benson pledging more money to improve the facilities. Griffin is making all these moves, and he's not wasting any time, and he's spending money like he should. Where he's going to be spending a lot of money, though, is going to be in free agency. We've seen what he's been able to do in Cleveland, where he pulled off trading Wiggins for Kevin Love and made some other smaller second-tier moves to build a championship roster. When do we think – are there guys on the roster – I guess my first question is, are there guys on the roster that you think Griff is going to want to retain, like a Julius Randle or an Elfrid Payton, or is the Anthony Davis situation top priority, and once that happens, they'll start attacking free agency?
Yeah, I think the Davis situation kind of has to be the number one priority, even though Julius Randle and Elfrid Payton are two very good players who could be significant pieces if they choose to keep them, and they're both going to be free agents, so that you run the risk of losing them without any compensation. So they have to be priorities as well. But, you know, whether you keep Davis or, more significantly probably, the assets that you get for Davis if you do trade him are going to determine what other holes you need to fill on your roster. And it's possible that they will get somebody else in a trade that can fill one or more of those spots. And, you know, I think Zion Williamson probably is a similar type player in some ways to Julius Randle. So I'm not sure Randle's value is quite as great as it would have been before Williamson arrived, and yet, you know, I think they could certainly use both of them. So the Davis thing, I think, just kind of influences everything else that they do. And I think they're going to come to a resolution there pretty soon. That, whatever trade they make, if they make one, is going to involve this year's draft. I'm sure that takes place on June 20th. I think they're going to be sitting down any day now to talk to Davis. So I think Griffin's going to know in his mind probably within a week whether he's going to trade him or not. And I think that trade has to happen by June 20th. So I think they can probably resolve that one way or another before they get to free agency, so they can kind of hold off on Randle and Payton and the other free agents until they solve the Davis situation. I think that's got to be the first thing they do.
We're talking with Les East here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. He covers the Saints and the Pels for CrescentCitySports.com. Les, I want to throw a name out to you, a young player that I've been impressed with his maturity and his level of play, and that's D'Angelo Russell. We thought he was washed up. We thought he was a draft bust. He just proved to be another one of those young Lakers stars that the Lakers did not know how to manage properly. He did great things with the Brooklyn Nets. He's a free agent. We know that the new general manager for the New Orleans Pelicans is a big fan of D'Angelo Russell, from his time as working in the Nets front office. Any possible way that the Pels go after a guy like D'Angelo Russell to run the point and let Drew Holiday be on the two?
Sure, that's possible. Trajan Langdon knows him as well as anybody, and so I'm sure he's going to talk to David Griffin about the value that he could bring here. I think Griffin probably has a pretty good idea of his own, but Langdon, being with the Nets, is going to have more firsthand knowledge of the value that Russell has. You know, Drew Holiday has made no secret that he does not want to be a point guard first. He can play there as a backup, give you some minutes there each night, but he is at his best in his mind, and I think he's right, when he's able to be primarily a two-guard. And so whether it's Elfrid Payton or D'Angelo Russell or somebody else, I think they need to have a significant player as their starting point guard so that Drew Holiday can be the two-guard primarily. So I think the backcourt is an area that needs to be addressed. And, you know, Russell can also score from the outside. They need more scorers, guys who not only can shoot from the outside, but can also get to the basket. So that's a very good developing young player that I think they would certainly look at, and Langdon's familiarity with him certainly helps in that regard.
Les, let's switch over to the New Orleans Saints for a little bit. They signed earlier this week Panthers defensive end Wes Horton. He was an undrafted rookie free agent who became a rotational guy and a starter for that front seven for the Panthers. I know they already got him in the books, and they've made some moves to shore up their defensive line, him being one of them. Do you give the Saints any chance whatsoever to go after Gerald McCoy, who was cut earlier this week for some god-awful reason by the Tampa Bay Bucks?
I think it's unlikely. I don't know how much money the Saints have under the cap right now. I don't think it's a significant amount. Certainly there's stuff they could do to increase that number, but I don't think that's something they could afford at the moment. They've done a nice job already of adding to the defensive front. They have three veteran free agents that they brought in on the defensive line. The only player they've lost is Alex Okafor. They do have the absence of Sheldon Rankins at the beginning of the season because of the injury. They don't know about David Onyemata, and a possible early season suspension. But both of those guys are going to be available for the majority of the season. So they're sitting pretty good at defensive line right now, and I don't think they have a lot of money to spend right now. So I wouldn't expect them to be a bidder on Gerald McCoy, but at the same time, they are definitely acting like a franchise that thinks it's on the verge and ready to win a Super Bowl championship. And they've been pretty aggressive in trying to add the final pieces to that puzzle. And if there's a way to make that happen financially, I'm sure they will pursue it. But right now, I don't think it's really likely that they're going to be able to do that.
We're talking with Crescent City Sports' own Les East. He covers the Saints and the Pels. Talking to him here on the ARCO Equipment Hotline. Les, one more question before we let you go. I'd like to give you a minute to talk about an article that you posted on CrescentCitySports.com, a terrific piece about one of the best New Orleans-based storytellers having passed. Tell the people who that is and give us a little insight about the article that you wrote.
Yeah, thanks, Raymond. It was about Ronnie Burgess, who passed away Monday night in Destrehan. Ronnie was a writer for the Times-Picayune for a period of time. He wrote for Gambit Weekly in New Orleans. He worked for multiple TV stations in New Orleans. And to my mind, and I think that of many people in New Orleans, he was the best writer among New Orleanians of his generation. He was just incredibly talented. And that ability often found its way onto the sports pages. He was a very versatile writer and had varied interests and wrote about a lot of things. But he did write a column for the about the fairgrounds for the Picayune called Whalebird Ronnie, which was vignettes from the track. He's been compared to Damon Runyon a lot because of the style that he wrote in with those stories. And those were, I think, some of the most memorable stories that he wrote. But he also wrote just about ordinary characters you would see around New Orleans and just the flavor of the city, the history of the city, and the people who made the city what it is. And he was just remarkably talented. I'm sure if you Google Ronnie Burgess, you can find some examples of his writing on the internet, and go and find it, because his ability to write was rare, and you'll get a lot of enjoyment out of any of his stories that you might be able to locate and read.
Well, Les, appreciate you writing that piece. It's terrific. I recommend everyone checking it out. And as always, brother, appreciate you making some time for us here on RP3 and Company.
Thanks, Raymond.
That's Les East. CrescentCitySports.com, joining us talking Pels, Saints, and just New Orleans all together. We got to take a break, but we'll be back right after this on 103.7 The Game. In Louisiana, there are thousands of miles of utility lines and gas pipelines buried just beneath the surface. Sometimes multiple lines are in one area. So if you are a contractor that you've hired is digging a hole to put in a new fence, a pool, or for another reason, you run the risk of hitting an underground line even by digging only a few inches. What happens then? Maybe you only knock the power out for your entire neighborhood. But sometimes there's an explosion with injuries and even death. It happens every year, and there's a very simple way to avoid it. Before you dig, call 811. Call 811 2 days before you dig, tell the operator your address, and someone will come out and mark the location of buried lines so you or your contractor can avoid them. Simple, right? It's free of charge, and it's the law. Louisiana One Call operates 811 as a public service, and to promote public safety, Louisiana One Call and 103.7 The Game remind you, call 811 and know what's below before you dig. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network, 24 hours of sports coverage. You can also check us out on LUS Fiber. That's going to be 133 and 1133 in HD. We've had a tremendous show so far. Talked LSU baseball, 17 innings of historic heartbreak at the SEC tournament in Hoover. They will be playing once again later today in an elimination game in the loser's bracket. They're going to take on Auburn. First pitch is set for 1 o'clock. You can listen to that live right here. Pre-game is scheduled for 12:30, but that could be moved back a little bit if the earlier game goes a little long. But we'll take care of you here. We'll break into Jim Rome show to bring you LSU baseball pregame and actual first pitch live game coverage from the SEC tournament. UL, meanwhile, is already playing in its elimination game. They had a extra inning heartbreak as well last night, as they lost in 13 innings to the number 2 seed Georgia Southern. That forced them down into the loser's bracket. They're taking on Troy, and that game is already going on. That started at 8 o'clock. It's going on right now. I do believe it's scoreless. Producer extraordinaire Cody Schutz is going to give us an update on the Raging Cajuns baseball. How are the Cajuns doing right now, Cody?
It is indeed tied, as you said. 0-0 still. I believe we're going into the top of the third inning. The Cajuns are the visitors today. And I apologize if you've been listening on the stream. We, for some whatever reason, jumped to national, but we're back now. We're good to go, so I apologize. But tied up, 0-0.
You get to hear. You get to return to hearing the soothing sounds of RP3. You're welcome. You're welcome, Acadian. ridiculous. Ridiculous. We'll keep you posted about UL baseball. If anything happens there, they're in the second inning. It's scoreless right now in front of a packed house of people there in Conway, South Carolina.
One way to describe it.
That's called sarcasm, possibly. We got to hit a break. More sports talk coming up next right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company right here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. You can also catch us with the simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1. That's the Stadium Sports Network, 24 hours of sports coverage. You can also check us out on LUS Fiber 133 and 1133 in HD. Cody Schutz, Reggie Cajun Baseball is in an elimination game. They're in the loser's bracket now at the Sun Belt Conference Tournament in lovely Conway, South Carolina. They're taking on the Men of Troy, not to be confused with the University of Southern California Trojans, but the actual Troy program out of Northern Alabama.
And guess what, Raymond?
Give me an update.
We have breaking news!
What?
We do. Maybe a little contrived there, but the Cajuns have taken the lead early in the game here. And as I speak now, a sacrifice fly play at the plate, and he's safe. The Cajuns now have a two-run lead in their game. Top of the third inning, the Cajuns are up 2-0 on Troy, two outs and a runner on first base. And the Cajuns scored their first run on an infield single. The guy scampered home, couldn't then beat the throw out to first base. Runners on the corners, next guy up, sacrifice fly to deep center field. Cajuns up 2-0, handsome Monica coming to the plate.
Was his swing handsome?
Well, he hasn't. It's still a first pitch. Still coming. But I can assume that, yes, it will be quite, quite handsome.
What a name.
And again, just a packed house. A packed house at Conway, South Carolina. That's unfair for us to make fun of how many people. It's 8 a.m. or 9 a.m. over there. We're ribbing them a little bit, but it's not really their fault.
It's not really. I like that. Not really their fault.
And you've got a team from Louisiana and a team from Alabama all the way in Conway, South Carolina on the East Coast at 9 a.m., you know, on a Thursday.
On a Thursday.
It's not anybody's fault that there's approximately 7 people watching this game.
Not exactly the ideal time, but we're going to keep giving you updates there from Conway. Hunter Castles is the one that got the infield single to make it 1-0. That also put runners on the corners. Hayden Cantrell, former Tarlings Catholic star, got things going. He's the one that doubled to put two runners in scoring position. Hunter brought him in. And then it was Todd Lott, all-conference honoree, with the sack fly to make it 2-0.
It's a big park they're playing in, by the way. Just looking at it, I didn't realize Conway
that's
was
the
such,
home.
Such a big park.
That's the home of the Chanticleers, my friend.
Oh, trying to steal second base. Successful steal of second. Throw makes its way into center field. Now the Cajuns, two outs and a runner on third base. Handsome Monica still at the plate, 1-1 count.
He has a handsome swing. We found that out earlier on the show.
That guy.
That guy.
I hope you, I have the volume turned down on the call, obviously, but I hope it's the same dude.
The same dude making the call. Same dude making the call. So the Raging Cajuns up 2-0 right now on Troy here in the elimination game in the loser's bracket of the Sun Belt Conference Tournament. We'll keep you posted with updates there if the Raging Cajuns keep it going. LSU, they'll play later today against the Auburn Tigers in an elimination game. Once again, Auburn was run-ruled yesterday by Vanderbilt.
Sorry to interrupt there. Base knock. A handsome base knock from Handsome Monica. Cajuns now up 3-0.
Oh, 3-0.
That steal a second. Errant throw, getting him over to third base. Coming through there. Handsome Monica with a nice ribby. 3-0 Cajuns, top of the third. And also, I'll need to do a little extra checking on this because according to the website, the LSU game is scheduled to start at 1 p.m. today. Yes. I just got an email from our friend Nick who lets us know about what times games are going to get cranked up and everything. His email says that first pitch is at 12:30. So now I'm confused. He says noon airtime, 12:30 first pitch, but everything else says 1 p.m. first pitch. But this is an email coming from the guy who like sends the signals. So I don't know. I'm not sure where the actual truth falls here. We'll have to do a little research on that.
We will reach out and update you when time LSU baseball, regardless if it's going to be 12:30 or 1 o'clock. We got you covered here.
Oh, it'll be on the air. Don't you worry about that.
On 103.7 The Game, LSU taking on Auburn in an elimination game there at the SEC tournament in Hoover.
Just an interesting email. I wonder, it can't be a typo, though, because he says first pitch at 12:30 p.m., and then in parentheses next to it, he puts noon airtime. So, I mean, I'm a little confused. A little confused.
So, yes. So, we'll have you covered regardless if they start at 12:30 or 1 o'clock. So, that way. Yes, LSU-Auburn. I expect LSU to bounce back. Cody, I know it's,
I need you to say you expect LSU to do very bad today is what I need you to say. Because
why?
Because yesterday you said the same thing, and it didn't end so well. So today I want you to try the opposite, and we'll see how that works.
Yes, because you think my words are going to travel to Hoover.
I have nothing else at this
point. And make an impact in the decision.
I have nothing else at this point that you know, can logically make a difference. You know, I mean, LSU, they're going to come out and they're going to – the bats are there right now. I'll go that far to say that, even though at the beginning of the game, whoever got the start last night, I'm forgetting his name, did very well against LSU. Then it seems that LSU needs to get into bullpens of these teams, whether it's Mississippi State, Auburn, or whoever. They need to get into the bullpen. I don't put as much worry into how Landon Marceau is going to do today. I worry more about how the bullpen is going to do today. Landon Marceau, I'm confident that he'll give you at least what Eric Walker did last night, if not more. And if we can get that out of him, I believe LSU is good enough to beat Auburn if they can get, let's say, 5 innings of 2-run baseball out of Landon Marceau. I feel like LSU at that point should be good enough to handle everything else they need to win this game and at least survive to live and play another day.
I think Marceau will pitch well. I think he built up some great confidence. So there was something terrific that he said afterwards, and I was fortunate enough to be there at Alex Box Stadium last Friday for that great pitching performance that he put on. He said something very telling. He said, "I'm tired. I'm no longer going to try to be someone that I'm not." He tried. He pressed too hard throughout the season to be a power pitcher. That's not his game. even though he struck out a bunch of guys, Auburn Tigers, on Friday night. He's more he's learned to pitch within himself. He's had a couple of good starts to end the season. He pitched his best outing against Auburn last Friday, where he went seven innings, only gave up the one run and two hits. Okay? If you can get Landon Marceau to come out and pitch on that kind of level again today, this afternoon, versus Auburn, you're going to give yourself a great chance. And you hope that he can go longer, because you had to use Zach Hess for four innings last night, early this morning. You had to use Mikhail Hilliard for 4 2/3. You had to use Matthew Beck for four innings. You can't use any of those guys today. And you already used Devin Fondeau for four innings and Todd Peterson for two-plus innings the day before. So they can't go a long distance for you. So you need Landon Marceau. He's a freshman. You're putting a lot of pressure on him because it is a win-or-go-home type of scenario for the Tigers this afternoon. But you need Landon Marceau to be able to go the distance. That's what you need him to do. You need it for him to be able to go the distance, get you at least six innings, maybe seven, set it up. That way you don't put a strain on your bullpen. You get the win. You move on in advance, and then you can reset your rotation. Maybe it'll be Cole Henry that can play and pitch for you on Friday. We'll have to see. But Marceau's going to have to step up. He's shown the ability down the stretch to pitch within himself and pitch extremely well and be a very effective, damn good pitcher. If he pitches like he's done the last two outings today, they win. The lineup itself will get enough runs generated to be able to get the win for LSU versus Auburn.
And I agree with that. Let's look a little ahead here. If LSU does win tonight, which we both expect them to do, they'll then move on and they'll play Friday. They win on Friday, they'll play Saturday. They win on Saturday, they'll play Sunday. My point is, losing last night, you can take it, if you look at just the game, okay, you lost a 17-inning game. That's one of those ones, like exactly like what Coach Maneri said. It's one of those ones, it's a shame either team had to lose that game because of how hard both teams played and tried to win and all that. But the bigger thing you take out of that loss is now LSU, you have no days off, literally, if you're going to win this tournament now. Mississippi State plays again today against Vanderbilt, but the winner of that game doesn't play again until Saturday. So if you would have won last night, you would have had an opportunity to play today for a day off on Friday. Now LSU, if they're going to make a run and get to the championship game of this tournament, it's literally no days off.
No days off.
That's today, tomorrow, Saturday, and Sunday.
That's the whole disadvantage of dropping down to the loser's bracket. It doesn't make it impossible. It just means you get no time off. And you have to go. And if you're LSU, you essentially played two games this morning.
I mean, 18 innings is two games. You played 17.
You played 17. So you essentially played a doubleheader with no, as we discussed earlier, no nap time.
Nope. And now you're playing a tripleheader with just a little nap in between.
And then you're going to have to turn right back around and play again on Friday. So,
and that game, they're all to be determined still, those game times.
Correct. So they're taking the hard way, because they lost the epic game last night. I will say it again, though, and I said it at the first hour of today's show. I believe that they will take care of business today, and that will lock up definitely them hosting an NCAA regional. They may be the 16 seed, national seed, or the 15 seed, but that will lock it up. They already got to 18 wins. I firmly believe, even if something dramatic happens today and they lose to Auburn, God forbid if you're an LSU fan, I know, I still think they have a very good chance of hosting a regional, because I don't think they're going to hold it against them for losing a 17-inning game. A historic game. The longest game in LSU baseball history, whether you calculate that by innings or by actual time played.
SEC tournament records too, right?
It's also the SEC tournament record for longest game played. I don't think that's going to be held against them that much. I sincerely do not.
Against a top five team in the country as well.
Correct. I just don't see it. I do not see that happening. So that's my thoughts. I could be wrong. Look, I'm proven wrong every day. My wife tells me so. And here's the thing. I say that in jest. She's usually right. Because then afterwards, I have to begrudgingly go, yeah, you're right. Damn it, I don't want you to be. But yeah, I'm just a big dumb man.
I'll give you that one.
I'm a big dumb man. Know that phrase. I know you're still in the newlywed phase, right, here, right, brother. But practice this, Cody Schutz, as advice from married man, older married man to you.
Mm-hmm.
Just go ahead and start memorizing that line. I'm just a big stupid man. You're right. You're right, and I'm a big stupid man. That is going to work wonders for you, brother.
Take you miles.
It will take you miles in life. Oh, it's been a terrific show, but we'll have to wrap it up. We'll do that right after this break right here on 103.7 The Game. Welcome back to RP3 and Company here on 103.7 The Game. We're broadcasting live from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. We're simulcast on KXKW Channel 32.1 and 133 and 1133 in HD on LUS Fiber. There's multiple ways you can check us out. You should do so, by all means.
And the mobile app is on the right stream again as well, too.
There we go. Boom! Take that. It's been a terrific show. Me and Cody have had tons of fun. A little sleep deprived because of LSU baseball.
Oh, my chest is starting to hurt. I don't know if that's related or not, but like.
So Cody Schutz is going to be stroking out live on the air.
And it's the left side of it. This is worrisome.
And we got Sport of Politics coming out, so can you just put that on hold?
Yeah,
right. For an hour. That'd be great. Yeah.
Working on it.
Thanks. Once again, reminder, LSU baseball, that will be at 1 p.m. We have it confirmed now. First pitch is scheduled for 1 p.m. 1 p.m. pregame set for 12:30. You can listen to it live later today right here on 103.7 The Game. Give you the rundown. After LSU baseball, the good brother Ben Love will be broadcasting live from the tap room at River Ranch. He'll be there. I bet you Jeff Horchek's going to be making an appearance. The legend, Jeff Horchek. We'll be there, so make sure to check out the good brother, Ben Love. He'll take you into Astros pregame as they wrap up their series with the Chicago White Sox. You can listen to First Pitch scheduled for 7:10 for Astros White Sox from Minute Maid live right here on 103.7 The Game. So we got you covered for LSU baseball as well as Astros baseball. We're going to take care of you today. Also, reminder, for the second straight year, Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love will be live from Minute Maid Park. Tune in tomorrow, Friday, the 24th at 4 p.m. as the good brother Ben Love will be live from the home of the Houston Astros right here on 103.7 The Game. The special broadcast is going to be brought to you by Artco Equipment. You should tune in. It was a tremendous show last year. It will be even better this time around. So make sure to check that out tomorrow night right here on 103.7 The Game. Cody, Raging Cajuns, they're in the loser's bracket just like LSU is. But the Raging Cajuns are playing in Conway, South Carolina for the Sun Belt Tournament. They're taking on the Men of Troy.
Yeah.
Give us an update how their elimination game is going on right now.
We're just underway into the bottom of the, I believe, fourth inning here. Once this replay finishes, I'll be able to tell you for sure. The Cajuns are still up 3-0, and Troy just successfully getting their first hit of the game. Troy was hitless up until this point. A double to lead. One out in the bottom of the fourth. A double for Troy there, so they've got a runner on second base, one out, still down, 3-0.
Reggie Cajuns are leading 3-0. It's a win-or-go-home scenario for them. So, Sport of Politics is going to be coming up next, but you can definitely tune in later for our two-minute drill. We will be updating that with Raging Cajun baseball information. Tremendous show lined up for you tomorrow. We will be recapping Raging Cajun baseball. Did they survive in advance? We'll be recapping LSU baseball, did they survive in advance versus Auburn? We'll be talking about that on tomorrow's show for sure. We'll also have our boy Barry Hurstis on talking about OTAs, New Orleans Saints. We'll get his thoughts. Should they go after Gerald McCoy? Andrew Juge? Les East? Don't think it's a possibility? Don't think it'd be that great of a decision? We'll see what Barry Hurstis says. I anticipate it being enthusiastic.
I mean, we heard what Drew Brees said. You're asking me if I want a guy on my team that I've been running from for 9 years?
Yeah.
I'd like him on my team.
Can we make that happen, please? We'll also have Tyler Nunez on from Tiger Rag. And in studio, returning, is the PA announcer at Evangeline Downs. They have a huge race this weekend. Michael Chamberlain will be live in studio with us once again. Looking forward to having a conversation with him. So make sure to tune in tomorrow for RP3 and Company. It'll be jam-packed, and we'll make sure to take care of you, help you kick off your Memorial Day weekend.
Can't wait.
What?
It's a great week. I mean, I have a pool now, Raymond. I have a pool now. Can you imagine what I'm going to be doing all Memorial Day weekend? I'll be in my pool.
I thought you were going to be bold and daring and say, Raymond, I'm just going to stand there and drink a adult beverage just looking at the magnificence of the pool. Because here's the thing.
Just watch it.
You start swimming in the pool, then you got to do the maintenance, brother. That's the thing, right?
I mean,
that's the thing.
We've had the pool for a couple months now.
There's a lot of work involved. You got to make sure the chlorine's right and the levels are right. And you got to make sure to get the leaves out and the bugs.
Well, the levels being right, that's, you know.
The dog will get in it.
As long as the water is clear and it doesn't look dirty, I'm going to go with it.
Random transient people just are walking through there and taking a bath in your pool at night. All types of things can happen.
Where I live, Raymond, if that happens, then somebody's getting shot. I'm sorry, but like if you don't accidentally wander into my backyard, like where I'm at, like no, that's not
Cody shoots.
You didn't end up here by accident.
You have so many layers. You're small and laid back, and everyone thinks that he's just fun loving Cody shoots. Huh. But there's a darker side to you. There's a darker side to you.
I'm sorry if I get a little ornery about someone bathing in my swimming pool. I apologize.
Don't act like it doesn't happen.
There's a bummer there, Raymond. Oh, no, it's a foul ball. All right, we're all right. The Cajuns, though, are under a little pressure right now, if you will. Troy has now stole third base, so less than two outs and runner on third for Troy. Stay tuned, probably during Sport of Politics. We'll try to keep giving you little updates here and there.
Perfect. That's what's coming up next. Reminder, stay tuned. Later today, LSU pregame is going to start around 12:30, tentatively scheduled. First pitch at 1 o'clock. After that, Bumper to Bumper Sports Live from the Tap Room at River Ranch with the good brother Ben Love. And he's going to lead you into Astros launch pregame show at 6:35. First pitch for Astros White Sox will be at 7:10. Keep it live and local all day right here on 103.7 The Game.